Find out.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another night of Full Spectrum Radio. I am Matt. With me, as always, is Dennis. What's going on, brother?
Well, you know, just a wonderful hump day that I didn't realize what day it was. I went to a client's property that was scheduled for tomorrow night. I went tonight. You know, just fun shit. I guess we can say now I know why it's called hump day. It's not because you, you know, hit the middle of the week and, you know, you're over the hump. No, it's because of my schedule and my luck, I'm going to get humped on this day virtually every week. But I do have, since you asked what's going on, huge shout out to the newest members of the Grandparents Club. Lyle and Tana Lotz. Grandbaby Connor came today. Everybody seems to be doing great. So welcome to the Grandparents Club, Lyle and Tana of Rich Twisted Paranormal. Much love to all of you and hope everybody's doing great, brother. So there we go. How was your week then, sir? Oh, other than going out and playing, I guess, River Rescue? Or is it River Road Rescue in this case?
It was River Road Rescue, man. Like, all right. I was at work yesterday, and the day was gorgeous. Like, I mean, no issues at all. I start driving home, and I was going through hail to where I am shocked that I don't have hail damage. What's funny is, Carroll Stream, where I came from, I could have hung out there for a couple hours and had no issues except for possibly getting home once they got closer to the Naperville area. And, yeah, I was driving at 30 miles an hour. And if you've never been in a Jeep Wrangler, the front glass, the front windshield, is just a straight piece of glass that is questionable when it comes to impacts. And so I didn't go over 30 miles an hour. I was hoping that there was nothing was going to come through. I was literally driving down the road with my hand on my soft top to feel how hard it was coming down. Well, then I get home, get inside. Hey, oh, I parked under a tree, which it was a very sturdy tree. I'm like, all right, cool. Like, no, if hail's coming down, at least I have the possibility of the branch catching the hail like a baseball bat hitting a baseball, slowing it down with the leaves and everything. I'm like, all right, cool. So I eventually had to move it. So I decided to just kind of go for a drive around the block, see the, or around the area and see how flooded everything was, and if I can get out in the morning, get back in, if the rain was going to keep up. That turned into almost a three-hour excursion of hooking up people with tow lines, pulling in the water, jumping out, pulling cars that were stranded out of water. I towed a guy with my tow straps literally into his driveway, which it wasn't that far from where his car was. And basically paved the way for a nearby apartment complex for people that were waiting to get in and out. It looked like leaving a concert or leaving a sporting event with how many cars were there. And what I would do is I would drive through, and in my wake, I should have brought the boat actually, but in my wake, I'd have these shorter cars that would follow me, and I basically was just doing laps for almost an hour and a half, getting people in and out of this apartment complex. So after the apocalyptic style evening, woke up this morning, went outside, ripped the top off the Jeep, still off the Jeep, absolutely gorgeous. So I've been riding topless. But other than that, it's been semi-uneventful.
I'm still trying to picture. Now, see, Richmond, we have some areas that flood, but it's got to have a shitload of rain to come down. So I don't know how much y'all got, but I certainly hope everybody made it safe.
I think last time when I saw the news report last, I think we got 2.73 inches in 44 minutes.
Yeah, that's one of those where the sky just opens up and goes, "Yeah, you're screwed."
Oh, dude, it was middle fingers from above. Right, that's so
on the way to my client this evening, we stopped so Hope could run into, some shoe shop. Wanted to get a new pair of sandals. It was lightly sprinkling when she went in. She made it about a quarter of the way across the parking lot, and the gobs just opened up on her, and I couldn't do nothing to laugh. I sat in the truck so I could program the GPS. She just kind of looked at me, and at this point, I'm like, "Well, run!" And I got the little vent visor, so I got my window cracked, and she just kind of looked at me and shrugged, like, "Why bother? I'm freaking drowned already." We did half a mile down the road, the road's still dry. I'm letting you know it was just you. Yeah, yeah. So,
well,
anyway,
funny little scientific fact. If you run in the rain versus walk in the rain, you will get more wet. So even though it seems like you're spending more time in the rain, you're making contact with more of the rain as you're running.
I would have to see that in actual theory.
It's in,
I mean,
in
it,
distance.
It makes sense. I mean, it makes sense, but still, I don't know. That one just sounds a little off to me. But anyway, so tonight's show, brother. I'm trying to work the board here. So go ahead and give us some info. I have one on the board now. The other number I'm not sure of. So I'm going to screen that. I'm going to bring
that in now. That's fine. You can bring that one in, too. I know it.
You know that one?
Right. Yep, we're good.
Is that the second part?
That would be it.
Awesome. All right. Well,
That would be him, I should say. What the hell am I talking about? It? No. I'm sorry, Michael, buddy.
Dude, you're a mess, man. You're a basket case. Full spectrum. This ought to be crazy whack jobs, not full spectrum. With a nut. Both of us. You're out there playing water rescue. And me, I'm putting my life on the line laughing at my wife getting drowned in the downpour. Yeah. So, anyway, good evening, Ursula. Good evening, Michael. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Hi. How are you?
Yeah, it's all right. How are you guys doing tonight?
Hot.
Very hot.
I know that, but
like a movie star.
I was gonna say I know that I was with you guys on Sunday. I understand this.
Wait, Matt, are you cracking the closet door and starting to peek out there? I mean, you're admitting that Michael is hot.
Well, he is.
Me, brother.
He is. I'm sorry. It's the. You know, I was sitting with him and, you know, eating food. And
oh, God. I forgot about this show. I wrote down somewhere, say no next time. Say no next time.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
This show's
well, apparently we have another fantastic welcoming to give. Welcome out of the closet.
in the closet, out of the closet, in the closet, out of the closet.
It just depends what time of year. If I need to snuggle, Ursula's busy, and, you know. Hey, a guy's got to try, right?
It's all about experimentation, right?
That's what we all do in this field. It's all about experimentation. Dennis, don't lie to me. You know you got stories.
I'm not saying a damn thing, brother. I am not saying a damn thing. I have been a carpenter for 20 years, and never once have I been accused of being a great nailer, but, you know, you give one hand job, all of a sudden, you know.
Oh.
All right. Once you go to the HJ, I'm going to bring us back on track for this.
This will be full rainbow radio.
And both Ursula and Michael have hung up, and I don't blame them.
And so the topic of the show tonight is...
I bought these wonderful curtains for my room. Oh my God.
Yeah, you want some.
Ladies and gentlemen, just have the funny.
Go ahead.
Have the guys in the funny white suits come get me now. I'm good with it.
little switch from. From what was originally the plan, which I actually, from what I looked at traffic-wise, worked out better, Ursula, that it wasn't the live portion.
Yeah, I think that would have worked out very well.
Yeah, I would be sitting on either 90 or 294 right now, still waiting. Wouldn't be able
Definitely.
To hear it. Yeah, nobody would be able to hear a damn thing, so... we will have to do that soon. Well, if you ever talk to me again after this show. I should say the intro of it.
That was live from the Chicago Psychical Center, right?
That's what the plan was. It did change a little. I wouldn't have been able to get there on time, so this is actually working out better.
Matt, I'm trying to plug it.
Yeah, no, and that's what I was going to say. Is speaking of which, I did want to have you guys explain a little bit about what the institution and center and everything is about, what the gift is that it gives back, and it definitely is something to support, but from the horse's mouth, it'll be a lot more thorough than me trying to explain it. So if you want, Ursula or Michael, whoever wants to field that, and just give a little bit of background, what it's about, and what the whole point of it is.
I'll talk a little bit about it. I think you...
Hold on, Ursula. Wait for it.
The idea to start this Society for Psychical Research, the Chicago Society for Psychical Research, it was something that I've wanted to do since I was probably a teenager, and it was kind of inspired by the idea, by my real interest in parapsychology when I was growing up and throughout college and as a graduate student. I did a lot of my studies in history and the history of parapsychology. And I think Michael agrees, and like-minded people with us agree, that there's, you know, all of the focus has come to be on, you know, what is termed ghost hunting or field investigation, and there's very little attention paid to, you know, our human abilities outside of, you know, adulating mediums and psychics, you know, on TV or whatever. So I think what we wanted to do with the Society for Psychical Research was to, you know, take some of this of what we do back kind of into the laboratory, as it were, and really start to look at the ways that we function with other senses that, you know, most people are not aware of, and, you know, figure out, you know, what are the things that, you know, make us more able to use these functions, and how do they work, and how do they interact, and how do people interact with each other through these different functions. And so something that we wanted to do was to start, you know, studying our human abilities rather than everything being studying spontaneous phenomena out in the field. And, you know, that's something that I found that there were several people that felt that way as well, that's something that they wanted to look at more. Michael, of course, was the first person because that's something that we've always touched on throughout our friendship over the years. So that was a no-brainer. This also came out of a friendship that I struck up with Ben Pavlon, who is the head of the Ghost Hunters Meetup in Chicago, who I've known for years as well. And we were both interested in trying to recreate physical mediumship experiments as were done in the Skoll experiments, and which probably a lot of the listeners are familiar with. And we really wanted to try to see if we could produce physical phenomena in a seance setting, and then to determine whether it was coming from, you know, from disembodied entities, or if it was coming from us, from the living. And so that was one of the main projects that really inspired this to actually get going. But we got together several times when we first rented the space that we're using in the back of a warehouse in the North Center in Chicago. And we discovered right away, I think Michael will back me up here, that there were things in the space itself that were getting in the way of us doing any kind of clean experiments.
When we set up the institute, we actually had a secondary and as Ursula just touched upon, a tertiary sort of agenda. The secondary agenda was based solely on the history of the spiritualist movement of the 1800s and a lot of the tools and the research and recreating a lot of the experiments that they did. You know, Ursula and I have always been very big into history and history of ghost hunting, and we don't take it lightly, and we have preached for years and years and years that people need to look back, see what's been done before, look at what the researchers of the past have done. In my field, in EVP, we've got Jurgensen, von Schlesi, all the way back to Burgosis and the Jessup expedition of 1902. And people don't realize, you know, they think EVP is something that you know, Zach Bagans does on TV. They don't realize that there's a history that goes back more than 100 years. You know, and in some cases, nearly 175 years on a lot of this. You know, we can go back to direct voice phenomena, spirit trumpets, which we've been doing some experiments with, and, you know, the Fox sisters, a lot of the real classic historical figures, a lot of their experiments and things they did. Ursula mentioned seances, table tipping even. you know, just a lot of these very historical milestones in psychical and spiritual research. And then, as Ursula pointed out, when we got into the space and we started working, we discovered sort of a tertiary response, and it was an active haunting of sorts, and the actual pull of our psychic energies, if you will, or our collective body to do this type of research was drawing in some absolutely maddening, phenomenal energy.
It was really something. I think we had met there probably maybe four times. And I mean, it got to the point where I think that we were really overwhelmed, and it was really affecting us, I think, just, you know, everywhere we went. And the voices that were recorded in that space were, for me, they were the most impressive voices I've ever heard. And they're very strong, very clear. They were not whispers. They were just very audible voices that were interacting with us. And some of them were whole conversations going on under our conversations as we spoke, you know, for these hours that we were there. I've never experienced anything like it. It was really something. And we really started to realize that it had to be from us all meeting there on this regular basis, constantly talking about this subject matter. I think we'd mentioned the other day, Michael, that we think the subject matter that we were discussing fed into whatever was happening. And, excuse me, and also that we had some objects that we brought in, too, that were taken away. Michael, you can talk about those. They're your objects.
Well, in my naivete, I guess, I thought it'd be a great idea to bring about 13 Ouija boards that I've collected over the years from various resale shops or yard sales, a lot of them from the 50s and 60s. Not some of the really, really old ones, but definitely a collection of various boards with various energies from various people and places. And the second object, which was probably the detonator cap for the whole issue, was a doorknob that I acquired from the Bellwitch cabin. Not a bright idea. And I suppose we err in our judgment in the excitement of our venture, right? So
it works. I think it works.
Yeah, the whole place is on fire. I think it's working. But we got incredible warnings, and I think Ursula was extremely moved by the voices of warning and caution and foreboding that we got, to the point where we actually canceled a field trip that we were planning on taking to a location.
That's, you know, I was thinking about that and what the foundation is about, and I was thinking of something that would be very, very kind of a cool experiment that we could do there because of it being an active location and kind of what the whole premise of the institution's about is, and Dennis, this involves you. What I was thinking would be awesome is we all kind of powwow there, not like a seance way. Dennis, being in Virginia, does a remote view on speakerphone along with having, and we can see what kind of collaborates there, along with seeing if we get responses through either the SB7 or EVP to whatever his reading and question would be about, and we could try it with a couple different people that aren't there.
Mm-hmm.
That would be that would be a perfect thing for us to do. That's exactly the kind of thing that we would.
Yeah, exactly. The whole institute is based on experimentation and research, as well as the historical perspective. Because we're constantly bringing electronic gear in there, and Ursula, what did we bring in there the other day? I mean, we have the our Radio Shack manual receiver, multi-band receiver with the wheels. What our
DX 200.
Yeah, open reel recorders. We just got an open reel recorder, Sony, a beautiful one.
You can't go anywhere with Michael without coming home with an old piece of audio equipment and some records. Can't do it.
That's true. That's sad, but true.
It's a bad title. There's nothing wrong with that.
No, absolutely not. It's a way of life.
And Ursula and Michael, also, I do want to give you a quick update and about the hospital.
Oh, yeah.
So we can't say where it is or anything like that, but I know there's other people that are involved with this whole thing that's being put together that are listening right now. And instead of individually texting everybody back, pretty much where it's at right now, it's 100% go with no questions asked. But the closing, the final paperwork, isn't going to be signed until June 3rd. And then it's open rain. That's what the holdup's been, which I found out today. I didn't know that. I thought it was already, like, signed, sealed, delivered, done, like, you know, it was owned. But no, the closing will be done June 3rd. And after that, then we'll start getting everything together to go in there and see what comes out before the place won't exist anymore.
So your listeners have something very exciting and mysterious to look forward to in the future.
Oh, yes. Yes, for sure.
And there is a potential that one of our listeners can have the opportunity to join us on the investigation. All they have to do is sponsor my ass getting from Virginia to Chicago.
There's a golden ticket. There'll be a golden ticket in a candy bar.
Dennis, exactly. I'm still working on that too. That's something I'm looking in, because for this investigation and what it is, Ursula and Michael, I think Dennis needs to be at this one.
Oh, definitely.
Well, I will tell you this: the first thing that I want to do. There's a long hallway on the third floor that I kind of tried to pop in to do a quick remote on the location, and I was pretty much accosted by a woman on the third floor. I'm fairly certain she was staff at one point in time, but it was peculiar. I couldn't understand a thing she was yelling, but she was screaming at me, running at me, down the third floor as I did my remote on the place.
That was probably my grandma.
Like, the fire.
No, it was probably my grandma. My grandma was a nurse and she was a registered nurse in the OR and an operating room assistant for decades at that place.
Amazing.
I still have to talk to her, but she may possibly be able to pop in with us, or if not, we can all get together to have some damn good food at one of the restaurants in Chicago and sit down, and we can get her stories, see what other information we can get, and actually really hit this thing. I mean, she worked there, hell, I think 40 years, I want to say. So she knows the place like the back of her hand. She knows all the stories. She knows some of the tragic ones and everything.
Now, I'm kind of willing to bet that with the size of the location, with the length of time that it was open, functioning, there's some hellacious events have occurred in that place.
This,
good and bad.
I mean, and research that I've done and everything, I feel so bad talking about this because I can't say it all. Like, I actually have to do an NCNB form on this because per the owner's request. But, yeah, it's one of those things. Like, there's nothing that's popping up or that has popped up that's been, you know, a fire burned half the place down and there were so many deaths and this and the other thing. It was just kind of a functioning, normal hospital. But they recently have had a lot of construction workers that have walked off the job and refused to go back in.
Hospitals are dynamic anyway. I mean, every day
bless
you deal with extreme illnesses and death and, yes, bless you too. And death and birth and the whole gamut of human range. So, I mean, I've always found hospitals to be extremely dynamic and have incredible energies and be extremely active.
We got to spend a really cool afternoon in the winter. I think it was one of the coldest days, right, Michael? At one of the hospitals in Gary, an abandoned hospital in Gary, Indiana.
Yeah.
As part of the research we're doing for a book about Haunted Gary for History Press. And we're really lucky because one of our good friends, Len, is a police officer in Gary, Indiana, and a paranormal investigator, great paranormal investigator, along with J.C. Rosita. And the police station is actually located in a wing of the abandoned hospital, and they have spent many, 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 many nights investigating this hospital, and we got a chance to spend an afternoon there a few months back. What an just an incredibly cool place. Just
well, one of the really incredibly cool things for me was I was able to actually record EVP in the room I was born.
You and Michael Jackson.
And Michael Jackson was born in the same room as well, the birthing room at the hospital.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I was born. I was actually able to record EVP in the place where it all started out for me, literally.
That's really cool.
Yeah, see, I don't even think the hospital I was born in is still standing at this point. But it would definitely be cool to get back there. But there's a few locations in Virginia that I want to get to over the next couple of years. But a couple of them are, I've got one, now figure this out. At one point in time, it was a nursing home. It became an elderly daycare center. Then it became a barbecue place.
Natural progression.
Weird. Yeah, I'm thinking Crawford's mortuary and barbecue. I was able to approach the building. Now, one of the team members on my team, well, actually three of the team members on my team are law enforcement. So I'm able to go even where it says no trespassing because he goes in while he's on duty. And it's a, you know, securing the location thing. Cool. You have to check and make sure it's secured. We found the door that was partially open. We wanted to verify that it was safe. Poke our head in the door, and there's still artwork hanging on the walls. I'm like, what in the hell? So that's definitely one of the places that we want to go. As far as hospitals, Ursula, since you didn't give a bio and not everybody knows exactly who you are, can you give a quick rundown on what all you're associated with here?
Yes, of course. My name's Ursula Bielski, and I'm primarily a writer. I've been writing about haunted Chicago and other paranormal topics for about 20 years, and I founded Chicago Hauntings Ghost Tours 13 years ago with my former spouse, and it's still going strong-ish. And Yeah, my background's in history. I have a master's degree in cultural and intellectual U.S. history, and as I mentioned, most of the work that I did was the history of parapsychology and interactions between science and religion, belief, all that good stuff. And I'm also kind of become known as a cemetery historian in Chicago. I've been doing cemetery research with Matt Hookie, who runs graveyards.com, for many years. We wrote our first book together in 1997 and just republished a new edition of it, Graveyards of Chicago. And so, yeah, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, but primarily I'm a Chicago ghost florist, is what they call me.
And I do have to say, Dennis, I know you haven't been able to experience her on location or in the field. Hands down, as far as what you gather from history and how it's put together and how it's presented, which I don't know where you come up with 3/4 of what you can dig up. I actually did a test after the tour that I was on with you, or one of the tours, I should say. I was like, all right, and it wasn't for verification, it was just to see how much work and how much dedication you put in and everything. I couldn't find
a quarter.
No, it wasn't a test. Shut up, Dennis. I couldn't find...
I'm trying to throw him under the bus.
Like, that hasn't happened before on that bus.
Yeah, I know, right? I couldn't find a quarter of what you found just on, like, Google and all that stuff. It's the amount of hours and going to library, researching, okay, this information was in this book on this point. I mean, it's phenomenal.
Well, you know, I did have the advantage of being a writer for about 10 years before there was an internet. So that kind of helped in my prestige.
You used to have to do that stuff? You used to have to do research? Oh, my God.
Remember when we used to have to, like, type stuff? Like, on paper?
Microfiche and... Do you remember libraries? Libraries.
Yeah. It's so funny. Chicago Hauntings, I wrote. There was a review that showed up on Amazon a few years ago, and it was like, this author hasn't done very much research. Like, much better books are, and it was like a list of books that had just been like cut and pasted from my books. And it was like, wow, it's like amazing. When you think about those days when I was writing Chicago Haunts and, you know, early 90s, it was, you go to the library, the first place you go to the library, and you go ask for the clippings files with all the newspaper articles from the neighborhood or the town or whatever, on whatever stories you're looking up or whatever people you're looking up. And, yeah, then the next thing is the microfiche, getting out all the film that you have to feed into those microfilm readers, and you sit there for days looking through all the microfilm. And then you go to the historical societies, and then you go to the bars and you talk to the people in the bars about what's going on, and go to the churches and go to the schools and hang out on the corner and talk to the kids, you know. It was a definitely different world, you know, when I started out writing. And there's this little club out there of like those old people, you know, that wrote our books back when. But you know, there are people that still do it the right way and the hard way. Adam Selzer, you know, who was one of our tour guides, is a great historian, and he lives in the archives of the History Museum and the courthouse and so on and so forth, and he's phenomenal. And, you know, just proud to have people like that working with us. Amelia Cotter, also one of our tour guides. These are great historians, great researchers, and, you know, they do it the old-fashioned way.
And when you're in those libraries, you can actually record and get voices.
A lot of them are haunted.
Yeah.
Well,
University of Notre Dame Library I go to quite a bit, yeah.
Well, it's amazing.
You have to take me one of these days.
it's amazing to me how, like, a lot of people, and I'm not saying kids, I'm just saying a lot of people in general, have absolutely no idea what the Dewey Decimal System is.
Absolutely true.
And, okay.
Yeah, there's so few libraries anymore. You know,
my daughter is, my daughter is 14 years old. She's a freshman here in Chicago. They use iPads in school, only iPads. They do mm-hmm. everything on their iPads. They read on them. They do their homework on them. They read their papers on them, do art projects on them. She has not touched a piece of paper this entire year. It's the craziest thing.
That probably would have saved my... in retrospect and future casting, that would probably help save part of my scoliosis from walking around with a 900-pound book bag.
Oh my gosh, isn't that the truth? I know, I like totally walk crooked because of that. Totally. I always had a bag full of library books.
Especially the journal collections. Oh my God.
Yes. Yes.
The journal collections? Oh, God.
When you guys were in school, I know when I was in school, Dennis, when you were in school, I'm sure they did it with time capsules.
Oh, yeah.
Where you'd take, like, things that were important to you at that time, you'd put it in a shoebox, and you'd duct tape the hell of it closed. And then you'd open it in, like, 20 years or whatever the thing was and be like, oh, wow, I was into that. Now I found out that they're doing it, like, virtual, like, save your favorite photos from Facebook and throw it in, like, there's an app for time capsules.
Hmm.
Like, seriously? Seriously?
Yeah, we're losing objects. We're losing actual physical objects for virtual digital representations. I mean, we're losing so many senses of touch and feel and weight and nostalgia and energy you pick up from actual objects.
That's true.
It's horrible what's happening.
Yeah, I mean, some of the locations that we go into, being early 1900s, some of the only things you can get are a psychic impression off of an object.
Bless absolutely.
Bless you.
Bless you again.
And that's the only thing that you kind of have to go on, you know, so to not have actual physical objects. I mean, pretty much everything now is disposable and, you know. Now, if, you know, 20 years from now we dig up a landfill, we'd find all kinds of shit because it's never going to go away. But, yeah, mine is photographs. I've still got, Mom kept every school picture of me going all the way through elementary and middle school. I finally got to the point where I'm just not photographic enough. Thank God too, because some of the ones from elementary have scarred me enough. I didn't want to see the other ones from middle school.
That turtleneck.
The one that bugs me the most was probably, I think it's a third grade picture. I was wearing a brown and orange horizontal striped shirt that was kind of turtleneck style. And I had this little plastic, I don't know, teddy bear necklace. What the hell was wrong with you? You let me go out of the house like that?
Was that the 70s? Necklace?
I'll tell you, the teddy bear necklace. Was that the 70s?
That's awesome.
The
70s were awesome, man.
Well your
black necklace
in the bag, that's for sure.
Hold on.
I was just telling Michael about my Easter outfit in 1975. It was a Cracker Jack t-shirt and white culottes with blue knee socks and clogs. It was awesome.
I'm going to give Dennis a challenge. The challenge is tomorrow being Throwback Thursday. It's Marvin Throwback Thursday. You better scan that damn thing in and post it.
There we go. In the '70s, we had the pook shell chokers. Everyone wore the pook shell chokers and brown cowboy type shirts.
Big collars. I love those big collars.
And
big
bottom
pants.
Knitted vests.
Which our moms would crochet for us.
Yes.
I will have you people know, damn it, I was cool. I had parachute pants.
Oh, we're moving to the next generation.
The 80s. We're talking about the 80s. I had bell bottoms, buddy.
I had bell bottoms, too, but that was before
I had
then.
Bell bottoms.
Michael, you didn't move on.
Yeah, you were up with the times, man.
This is retro.
So,
all right, well, now that I've embarrassed myself enough and harmed my reputation enough, Michael, you haven't given us a brief bio on
God, Ursula, what's wrong with us? What's the next question? My background.
Teddy Bear necklace is too tight.
Exactly. The poop shell choker. The poop shell choker, baby. My background is in communication. I hold a master's in communications theory, and I research electronic voice phenomena, and also ambient spaces and structures and sounds from actual buildings and environments and stuff, and then build them into not only representations of the environment, but electronic experimental music as well, which I perform and lecture abroad and in the U.S. I develop a lot of theory and research on not just the history, but of the actual foundations of electronic voice phenomena and quantum physics of microsound theory and a lot of really boring stuff that people usually fall asleep when they're listening to. Exactly. For instance.
Matt, wake up.
But I took a look at electronic voice phenomena, and I wanted to see exactly what the mechanics of it was. I mean, a lot of people ask where it's coming from, and they make speculation on what they're getting, and they always want to know the answers to the question of death, which has always been, you know, what happens to us when we die, which has always been the question. But I've always taken it from the approach of just a scientific collection of material that someone down the road may find an answer to. I wasn't really looking for an answer. I was looking for more of the construct or the mechanics of what this phenomenon is and how it works. So that's really been primarily my focus on the field.
Have you come up with a viable theory as to what an EVP actually is and how we
what I've been working on mostly is energy theory. A lot of Einstein, Marconi, and people like Gabor and the Gabor matrix and Curtis Rhodes and microsound theory and granular cloud synthesis. Basically, everything is energy. We're made up of 60-odd chemicals and a low-level static electricity. When we die, that electricity, which carries all the information of what we've learned and what we know and what we feel and what we desire and everything, still exists. Because, as Einstein said, energy can never be destroyed or created. It's either resting or kinetic. With that, theories on energy and that, what I've done is I've taken a look at actually how that transforms and how that travels through us as living humans and into the afterlife or after we lose our physical bodies. In Lausanne, Switzerland, to the school that does all the research on phantom limb movement and phantom limb pain has actually just come up recently within the last year, proof that our DNA actually carries some of that electronic material as it's passed down through our children's children and children. So we actually carry bits and pieces of memory from our ancestors in our family line. So a lot of times when you think you're having like a past life experience or whatever, it actually might be a fragment of memory from your great-great-great-grandfather or what have you.
You know, and
well, it was a big news story recently.
Yeah, and if, like, if you watch Discovery Science or, you know, any of those kind of channels, is or I can't remember what show they highlighted that on. It was all about kids, to where the kids, like, basically relived one of their ancestors' past lives that they would have. It wasn't Psychic Kids. It was on for a short time, but they would highlight, like, a four-year-old kid that would be talking in, like, aviation code, and he would describe...
Oh, you're talking about the book Soul Survivor. Soul Survivor was about the kid that remembered his past life as a pilot during World War II.
Yeah, the book was written about the kid, and that was actually the introduction to the show, like, that for the listeners who don't read all that much.
but what's interesting is, what if that kid actually picked up some genetic material, maybe not from his own family line, but some cross family line, you know, like maybe his uncle's, you know, blah, 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 was a pilot, and he actually picked up those memories and stuff through that. I mean, you know, a lot more gets passed down through our children and their children than just DNA. I mean, it's just not chemicals. We also get part of that encoded electronic memory.
Okay. Well, I want to hit you on this one. I've got a question out of the chat room. Marcellus wants to know, have you ever captured a voice mimicking your own voice on audio? And
voice
would
borrowing.
Would you consider that evil or a trickster spirit?
I've termed it voice borrowing, and I've gotten a lot of captures. In fact, we just recently were doing an investigation at the Lincoln Park Zoo the other night, and we captured a voice borrowing, which I haven't gone through yet, but it was clearly a voice borrowing of Ursula. And they're earmarked by, you can hear the researcher's voice, and you can hear the researcher's voice underneath their voice saying something completely different. Now, at the Sally House, one of the more famous cases of that was a case where I was talking about leaving some equipment downstairs, and you hear this sort of wind-up, this rrr, and you hear my voice say, there are maggots all over here, and then you hear it go rrr. But the whole time I'm saying that, underneath it you hear, oh, guys, I'm sorry, I forgot that. I've got to go downstairs and get this equipment or whatever. And what it is this memory, this what I call persistence of memory, this active knowledge of how to function as a human or as a living being that exists in this energy cloud, or this granular cloud of memory, looks for like energy, because like energy attracts. So it looks for energy that it can use to manipulate, you know, and maybe not consciously, maybe it's just subconsciously, but energy that it can use to manifest sound or communicate, even if it's inaudible to the human ear because of lack of pressure. You know, so what that is they're taking actually the source material that we are giving it as an investigator. As an investigator, we can affect an environment. So when we go into a location, not only do we bring the energy we bring in with it, but as we create energy, or not create energy, but manipulate energy to make speech or communicate with each other, we're actually adding to the actual energy of that location and giving source material to this conscious energy, if you will, to use it as source material to speak. And so a lot of times what you'll capture is what I call voice borrowing. And what it is it's taking the actual frequency patterns or the waveform of our voices, and it's writing in on that, and it's manipulating, changing the waveform to the point where it can change the words only, but keep the same intonations and melody of your voice.
Right. Now, on that same line, I did an investigation with my team. It was on a Wednesday night. I left them. I actually sent them in the basement of the location.
I stayed upstairs to do a small part on the Radio Pro prior to joining them. And they actually got my voice back on an EVP. And I hadn't even been, well, I had been downstairs, but it had been 45 minutes or so earlier, given a walkthrough. They got my voice back.
Marconi said energy or vocal energy, radio frequency, what have you, never really disappears. It only gets infinitely smaller. Marconi thought one day that they'd be able to create a device so sensitive that they'd be able to pick up, his big wish was to pick up Jesus giving the Sermon on the Mount. So even though that you've left the room, have you ever walked into a room where people have had a fight and you can feel it? You can almost hear the words. It's so thick because two people had a really bad fight in there maybe a half hour ago or an hour ago. And you walked into the room and you just knew something happened there.
Well, I do that all the time. It's part of the weird
well,
part
right,
of
right.
Abilities.
You're probably a bad example being a sensitive, but the fact is that most people, most non-sensitive or lightly sensitive people could probably sense that, or they do sense it. And it's because the energy doesn't actually go away. What it does is it just starts to dissipate and sort of get smaller and smaller and smaller and more separated and absorbed into the ambient energy of the room. So even though you weren't in that room at the time, your vocal energy could have still been there for an entity to pick up.
Well, to make it a little more simplistic, the way that I describe a situation like that would be if you're in, for a drastic event like a fight or a murder, is if you're sitting on the shore, on North Shore in Hawaii, when it's surf season, is you see the wave rolling in, but when it hits the shore, it's just a little ripple. So
right, exactly,
you have this
right.
Massive thing going on, but it condenses down to something extremely docile. But you still see it, you still witness it, you still hear it happening. You hear that lop on the shore.
But the most ferocious tidal wave eventually becomes a ripple at the end of the pebble lined beach, of course. Yeah, absolutely
yeah.
Right. That's exactly right.
Well, I'll tell you what, is there a way to assure that an EVP that's captured is something outside of the human voice spectrum possibility? Because I have one that is so loud and so clear that even Matt questioned me on it, whether I was certain it was not one of my teammates.
One of the big misconceptions in electronic voice phenomena is frequency ranges. And I've learned a lot from my work and studies in microsound theory, which is a quantum physics that deviates from regular sound engineering theory, where in regular sound engineering theory, they say the shorter duration of a sound, the higher frequency that the sound is until it becomes out of human range, which isn't true. In microsound theory, what they say is the shorter duration of sound can still be within audible range. It just doesn't develop enough pressure or decibel to be able to be picked up by a human ear. I mean, everybody talks about the vocalization, you know, what's said or what's manipulated in or out of human range, but they never talk about the experiencer. They never talk about the listener and their ability to pick up pressure with their ears. So when you talk about things that are below 20 hertz and above 20 kilohertz, and things like that, you're talking about delivery. You're not talking about reception. And so maybe that's really not the point. And a lot of my research and a lot of my lectures kind of built around maybe that's not the point, that what it is that these short durations of sound just don't develop enough pressure. And then when we record it with a microphone, which, of course, is a magnet and a coil, and what that does is it compresses. Because everyone says, oh, don't use that. That'll compress sound. Well, that's what if that's what you want? What if you want to take a slice out of that granular crowd and compress it into an audible, you know, an audible selection? What if you want to give it enough pressure to be picked up by the human ear? And that's what may be happening here. It's not a matter of it being out of audible range. what it is, it's a matter of not having enough pressure to be audible. And so when you record something, that's why we choose recorders that have no noise reduction. Because if you pick up something that just adds pressure to the ambient air, what you're doing is you're compressing a sliver or a slice of this atmosphere and compressing it into an audible range.
Okay. Well, that's kind of what... Well, I'll tell you what. I've got the EVP actually loaded on the board. I want to play it just out of curiosity and try to get your take on it. Now, I realize that, you know, you're not able to run it through an oscilloscope or anything just listening on the board, but none of us heard anything. It's a voice that is not a member of my team. I will assure you that. He was mimicking us. Like, not mimicking as in repeating us, but mocking, I think, would be more the accurate word. But here we go. I'm going to hit it twice. It's only 6 seconds long, so here it comes.
The first one that gets anything, that's where we congregate.
Goodness.
The first one that gets anything, that's where we congregate.
Goodness.
Now, you hear that little high-pitched constant tone in there. That's all the crickets around the damn building.
Okay.
But that second, the deep voice at the very end, we didn't hear it. And about halfway across the, like this was at a, well, hell, I can say the name of it, Enriquez Historical Park. So it's a rather large place.
Mm-hmm.
We left that building and headed for another building, and we made it probably 50 feet when that played, because I started to do playback, and I caught that voice and about shit myself, because it's this nice, deep, goodness, like, and, I mean, you can almost hear the sarcasm in his voice.
Well, that's the beauty of EVP. In fact, when I go to clean EVPs, I make sure that I don't remove the human qualities of it, because you want to retain the thing that gives it that real thing, that connection to us, is that human quality in the voice. Yeah, I mean, you can tell a lot from an EVP. You can tell the socioeconomic condition of the entity. You can tell what part or region of the country or the world they come from. Man, you know, woman, distressed, happy. There's so much information you can get from a piece of audio that you can't get from any photograph or any film anywhere, that when you capture something like that, that's what really becomes phenomenal, is because you have a human connection to it. And like Ursula, for instance, you know, since we've been working together, and she had claimed when we first started working together that she never had really good captures on EVP and stuff. And as we've worked together and the energies of us as researchers have become tuned to the work we are doing, that energy actually becomes part of the catalyst for the entities to actually communicate, if you will, like an antenna. And so it picks up a lot of the emotions and a lot of the emotive powers of us as researchers. And whatever was going on with you at your location, you know, you said sarcasm. You know, I cue in on emotive responses like that, sarcasm, anger, banality, you know, what have you. And it's really important because we have to understand that, and when we go into a place of research, we can affect three things. We can affect the environment, we can affect the subject matter, the entity itself, or we can affect us as researchers and go in there with good attitudes. You know, they say never go in there after you've had a fight. Never go in research when you're in a bad mood or depressed. You know,
and never go on a research or investigation after you stopped at a hot dog stand and had chili cheese hot dogs.
Or White Castle.
or sit in a vehicle on the way to an investigation when it's a 2-hour drive after having chili dogs.
Yes,
this sounds like a personal issue.
It does.
Oh, my God. That's what Dennis was getting at.
Ursula, there's your next book, Gastritis and the Ghost Hunt.
I was in the back of a soft top Jeep.
The gastronomy of a ghost hunt.
Yeah. I was in the back of a soft top Jeep. There's three of us in it. We're almost out of town, and we know we're going in the sticks to do this investigation. We have no idea if there's going to be any food close to the location. And I'm like, we've got to stop in this little, you know, last little strip mall, and let's see what's in here. The only thing that was there was a place, I think it was like the Wiener Shack or something like that. All three of us ended up getting chili cheese hot dogs, and for the love of God, I thought they were going to kill me in that Jeep. Of course, they're smart asses. They're up front. I can't open a window in the back. I pulled out my razor knife and told him if he didn't drop a window, I was opening mine. Not to mention that, you know, the demonic stomach grumbles all the way through the investigation.
Okay, I'm sure that's what you were dropping.
Yeah, and of course, tagging everyone, that was my stomach. That was my stomach. So all the way through review, I'm going, good Lord. So I have another question, and this one's kind of a long question, but I think we've already kind of touched on it. Have you heard something that sounded so clear and loud you thought it would be on audio to find that it wasn't caught? Now, do you think it may be more of a mind-to-mind response than something we actually hear, or, you know, such as spirits are actually putting it into our mind and we're not actually hearing it with our ears?
Here's one for you, and it's, I don't know if it'll answer your question, but I have a family farm in Effingham, Illinois, that the family had since 1927, and my uncle and cousin lived there last, and my uncle died, and my cousin went to Memphis, Tennessee, Nashville, to finish his PhD, and he began teaching at a university there. And I did an investigation there after all that had transpired and captured a voice of my uncle clearly saying, Mark is dreaming. It's just that clear. It says, Mark is dreaming. And I sent the EVP to my cousin Mark, and I didn't tell him anything about it. I just said, I captured this from my farm, from the farm. And he said, that's my dad. And I said, well, I know. And the weird thing about it is it didn't occur to me right away, but at one point I realized when I was in college, I was asleep. I had fallen asleep at my grandmother's house next to a girlfriend or something, and I had this dream. And in this dream, the same voice, which I didn't recognize at the time I had the dream, said, Mark is dreaming. So it's the exact same voice that I had heard in my dream probably 26 years later, earlier rather. So like, you know, 23, 26 years earlier, I had this dream. And I don't think I've ever really told anyone that part of the story because it's too phenomenal. It's just, it lends to too many bizarre questions.
So,
but
at the point in time that you had the dream, was your uncle already deceased at that point?
No. No, when I had the dream, it was 23. I mean, I had captured the EVP less than a year after he died. And I had the dream like 26 years earlier. And it was in the dream, it was a dark room. It was a really weird dream, but I remember because it was so stark. And the voice, which was my uncle's voice, said, Mark is dreaming. And I didn't recognize it at the time. And I put the dream out of my mind, obviously. But when I captured that EVP, and not right away either, at some point I was listening to it, I said, oh, my God, I had this dream once. And so does that kind of go along with the lines of you know, what you're talking about? Because in a movie I did called Dead Whisper, we were doing Rick O'Dea's, which is now Irish Legends. And the owner at the time, we had captured an EVP up in the attic. 2 hours later, we were downstairs filming, and the owner was downstairs, and he said the exact same thing that the EVP said in his voice, in a different voice. But the phenomenal thing about it was is we didn't capture the EVP until post-production. We found the EVP in post-production, and it said exactly what the owner said in a different voice, in his voice, 2 hours later downstairs.
Well, see, and for me, I'm used to hearing things that, you know, audio doesn't capture, because a lot of times when I do talk to spirit, it's all in my head.
It's a lot of voices in your head.
Well, even if it's all in your head, I mean, who puts it there? You know, you have to ask yourself
exactly.
Who puts it there. You know, just
well,
because
it's
inside
like,
your body doesn't mean it's any more of a spiritual phenomenal experience than outside of your body.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, like the night that I was talking with Matt on the phone, and I did a remote on location that he had talked about. He hadn't given me any information on it, but everything that I got back on it was exactly what had occurred there. And, you know, I didn't hear these voices. It was all just, you know, it was like the thoughts and the pictures and the images of everything around there was just into my head all at once. And, you know, for somebody with abilities, that's kind of strange to be able to, you know, draw an image out of your own head and it'd be accurate for a place that's 1,000 miles away.
One of Ursula's favorite psychical phenomena in psychical media is Sirius. Sirius? Ursula?
Yes.
Yeah. You want to talk a little bit about what he did?
Yeah, I've been, I think the...
Projecting images?
Ted Sirius was, he was a Chicago bellhop. He worked at the Hilton in Chicago in the late 50s and early 60s. And he became quite famous for a while. There was a book that was written about him by a parapsychologist named Yul Eisenbud, who studied him at length for many years, had heard about what he was doing from some colleagues in Chicago. He lived out in Denver and had come to Chicago to study Ted Sirius and found that what he was claiming he could do really seemed to be accurate, and that was that he claimed that to be able to impose images from his mind onto Polaroid film. And it was an ability that he discovered kind of by starting to be hypnotized. There was a colleague of his at work at the Hilton that was an amateur hypnotist, and he found that Ted was a great subject. And they concocted this scheme to try and find buried treasure around the Chicago area by hypnotizing Ted and trying to get him to do remote viewing under hypnosis. And he found that after he started to do this hypnosis, and he was such a good subject, that the hypnotist gave him a Polaroid camera and asked him to try and get photographs on the film of the places that he saw in his mind where these, you know, small treasures had been buried in people's backyards or what have you. And so that's how he started to try and imprint images on film. And it took a lot of practice, and he was very, very devoted to it. He would sit in his apartment for hours at a time for months trying to imprint these images on film, and he became quite good at it. And what, to this day, the work that he did is very controversial. You know, people like James Randi, you know, quote unquote, exposed him as a fraud, whatever. But, you know, it was the same kind of thing. Like, people were able to replicate what he did using different devices. So they claimed that he was a fraud because they could reproduce these things under normal, with normal means. But Sirius was very interesting. He was a terrible alcoholic, and he had it was very fortunate that he was studied by this parapsychologist, because in his book he really went into depth about his emotional circumstances, his whole life story, and the conditions that he believed and the personality traits that he believed were conducive to having this ability. He had this fiery temper, and he felt that his drinking actually fueled his abilities, which is interesting. There's some cases that are going on now, some colleagues that we have that are studying this possibility that, you know, alcohol and drugs can actually, actually heighten people's awareness of things, you know, ideas that some researchers had back in the 60s, you know, that they experimented with a lot. And
sign up for the
coming...
Chicago Research Center now. Sign up today.
Yeah. So these are, you know, some of the things that he was talking about in studying Ted Serios. But this is one of the projects that we are working on, looking more into the work that he did. The book about Ted Serios, it's called The World of Ted Serios, if anyone wants to look it up, was the first psychology book I ever read as a young girl. So I've been fascinated by him my whole life, and we started to do a little bit of research on him, trying to replicate the results that he got. But one of the most important... I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, one of the most important things I think that Joel Eisenbaud found in the work of Ted Serios is that the images that he was able to project onto film were... there were like dream images, because they were places that could be identified, like the Chicago Water Tower. There was the old Stevens Hotel sign, which was the former name of the Hilton where Ted worked. There was, I think, a Canadian Mounties station in Canada. This was a famous example of what Eisenbaud discovered in Ted's work, was that his images were very realistic and true to fact, except they were slightly different. Sometimes the lettering on a sign would be off. A word would be misspelled. Something would be in the wrong place. An object would be somewhere that it wasn't, or a decoration on a building would be slightly different. So it was almost as if these were things that were occurring in Ted's memory that he was actually imprinting. And then it wasn't that he was picking up impressions from elsewhere that he was imprinting, but these were things that were actually, you know, files that were stored in his memory that he was somehow able to transfer into a physical medium that other people could see. And it was something that no one had ever really studied before. Now, there are other, these so-called Nensha photographers that have come up from time to time around the world. And it's fascinating when these images are found. Sometimes they're projected onto film, sometimes they're projected onto walls or floors or other objects. But I think, yeah, the most important thing that he found was that these really seemed to be images from Ted's memory, and not that he was actually picking up these impressions clairvoyantly, as we would say.
I remember the car had no hubcap, which was really eerie when you looked at them.
Yeah.
Well, and also something important thing to keep in mind, during that time, there was no Photoshop. There was no, any photograph can be altered, but it was way, way more involved than what it is now.
Right. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, we did some experiments with actually the exact same camera and the exact same film that he used. And the type of film that it would be nearly impossible to
manipulate. It's so
anyway.
Hard to take. It's like a major production to take a picture with a Polaroid camera from 1960. It's crazy.
Yeah.
He used a device that he called his gizmo, which was it was a tube that he would make from a piece of cardboard that was an insert, part of the insert of the film package, and it was just a rolled up piece of cardboard that he would cup in his hand, and he would use it, he said, to focus the energy onto the film, and he would hold it to his forehead and, you know, make these grunting noises as he gave instructions to for the photographer to click the shutter on the camera. And so there are all of these elaborate explanations that were cooked up by skeptics still today that he had transparencies that he was hiding in this gizmo with pictures imprinted on them, and that he was, you know, using these to create these pictures fraudulently. And the cumbersome, awkward, time-consuming, you know, the way that this would have had to have been done is just absurd. I mean, the things that sometimes, you know, I try to be very open-minded and skeptical when I look at anything, but really the things that skeptics come up with sometimes, it's just crazy.
Well, I have a question out in the chat. Marcellus, who has asked the last two questions, which have been awesome questions so far. What type of recorders do you recommend, and do you use multiple ones to get a 360 view of the EVP session?
I've got probably 150 recorders. One of the things I look for is again, anything that doesn't have built-in noise reduction. We don't want the filters. We don't want the noise reduction. Lately, Ursula and I have been doing a lot of work on laptops, recording direct onto laptops. And we've been working with different places to hold them that so our energy could actually act as sort of an antenna for the EVPs. I recommend you get out there and try everything. We've used open reels, cassette recorders, micro cassette recorders, laptops, digital handheld devices, more professional recorders, anything, baby monitors, cell phones, anything you can get a hold of, try.
It's
but don't
really
spend
amazing
a lot.
Too. I mean, you really, I think you really have to keep in mind, and this really didn't hit home with me until I started working with Michael. There is definitely a mediumship factor in recording EVP. You know, we have had many times where he had a laptop and I had a laptop and we were right next to each other, same location, hit record at the same time, and I got nothing. And he got, you know, like 100 EVPs in, you know, half an hour. Michael's clairaudient. He is, you know, described by more than people than me as like a lightning rod for EVP. It makes a huge difference who you are. And I think it's really important to be aware of that and be okay with that. I think so many people are determined to get these great voices and great recordings. And you have to really recognize that, you know, we probably all have some ability that we can develop, but some people are just gifted to do it. And if there's a person, you know, that it is better at it, is gifted at it. You know, there's something else you can do. You can do something good too, you know. But there are people that are really good at it. And I think there should be really an effort. You know, there's a lot of teams that are working now in the last few years together. And it's so important to find the thing that each person is good at. And there's going to be one person that's really great at this. And it's a matter of taking the time to find out who that is. You know, if it's more than one person or whatever, but it can be very striking, the difference between someone that is gifted and has this mediumistic quality for recording and someone that's not.
Everybody has a mediumistic gift. You know, some people are wonderful at scrying or photography or audio. You know, you have to find your particular tool, your vehicle.
Well, I will tell you, in a private residence, Ursula is phenomenal at repetition on a PX device and direction. Remember that house that we did? It was up, 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 up.
Yeah.
Like every 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Her work with the PX is phenomenal anyway. We've used her work with different receivers, like the manual 60s receiver that we picked up from Radio Shack.
Yeah.
Direct to a laptop, different places and different positions. And one of the things she's extremely gifted at is the PX. But, you know, another thing with Ursula, and she's just starting to realize this, that I fully felt about her, that I'm starting to really point out to her, is she's her photography. We were at a location the other day, and you caught two, three incredible, I mean, class A photographs, a shadow person, actual figure, full body apparition in a window with detail. She's really coming to this tune with herself with the camera, and I think she needs to develop that because she's absolutely gifted.
I would fully agree. And Ursula, you know the house that I'm talking about, the couple, the two women we did where we sweat our asses off.
Oh my god, it was like what was the temperature up there? We're recording the temperature. It was like 110 degrees.
Yeah, upstairs it was like a hard exactly.
It was an attic. Attic with no air conditioners, no window, well insulated.
In
August or something. Yeah.
Oh god, that was grueling. That was definitely grueling. That was one of those that you're like, I hope they never call me back again. Or if they do, they get sent to
We're just going to tell them it's not on it.
Yeah. No, there's nothing going on, yes. There was actually demons with wings flying around the house, but no, you have nothing going on. You're fine now.
Yeah.
No, physically,
demons with wings, but... That farm that I went and investigated.
Speaking of demons with wings.
Yeah. Oh my god, this place is
horrible. You guys were so messed up, seriously.
Yeah, only on Full Spectrum Radio, right? Or only or Dennis and I. If we can create a topic that Dennis says, oh, speaking of demons with wings. What?
This place is horrible. I kid you not, the one window, I'll bet, had 100 stink bugs in it. And we're sitting in a room doing an EVP session, and I had done a remote view on this location 2 weeks before I got there. And I stepped into this room doing my remote view, and I got a man charging at me. I could describe him to a T, and the only thing I got out of him was, get the fuck out. Well, when I described him, it turns out that the homeowner met us there, let us into the property. It's been empty for, I don't know, 8 months or so. But her family has had three generations live there. And when Lyle from Twisted Paranormal invited me to go along because I gave him the remote information. And he said, hey, do me a favor. Describe the man that you met upstairs that told you to, just to pass out.
Who's driving?
That is my grandfather. He's like, and that was his personality. Well, we're sitting in this room, and you keep hearing, like, this noise when I'm doing my review. You keep hearing, like, what the hell? Why do I keep hearing this thunking noise? And then about the fifth one, you hear me go, I just had a stink bug fly directly into my damn recorder. It's sitting on the floor. And it sounded identical. And little demons with wings, because you would hear like this. What the hell was that?
Why is it I can picture Hunter S. Thompson saying that?
It was like last night we were investigating the zoo, and the most active part is that literally the women's bathroom in the basement of the lion's house at the zoo. This is all built on the old city cemetery. And we kept hearing like someone sneezing, right? And it turned out to be the air fresheners that automatically puff out the air freshener at intervals.
And then there was that smell
of
the man with the cologne.
We were like, what the? Yeah, and there was the smell of the man with the cologne and the sneezing. And we're like, oh.
Having to smell just like the air freshener. Yeah.
To mess with these people, I'm going to put in cigar at this moment.
Oh, I smelled cigar smoke, and I heard a exhale. No, that was the air freshener.
It'd be great to have an air freshener as it goes off. It goes,
That would be awesome.
How amazing would that be? That's what we should come up with, is haunted air fresheners.
There we go.
Yeah, we really should. That would be fantastic.
To freak people out who, oh, yeah, I own a bar that's haunted. I own a restaurant that's haunted. Put it in the bathroom and it goes, ooh, and then you smell some stuff.
That would be phenomenal.
Yeah, of course,
horrible
for research back 20 years, but...
Exactly. Yeah. It'd be horrible for us. I was at this restaurant and I heard this sound when I was in the bathroom and
Is it hygiene?
No, we're gonna scrap that idea. But no, hey, couple things, and we have a half hour left in the show, but a couple things I want to bring to light for everybody local, to us who doesn't know. Have we changed the name from Ghost Conference, or is that still in the works, and we don't want to talk about that yet?
No, we haven't changed it. We haven't changed it. That idea was voted out by the boss. Yeah. So I guess he had tried to do something like that before at this location, and it didn't work out very well. So our Chicago Ghost Conference is actually we are kind of tagged on with Willie Adkins' Chicago Paranormal Film Festival. And so it's going to be this huge extravaganza. And the date is going to be, I don't know the numbers, it's the weekend before Thanksgiving. I think it's the 20th, 21st, and 22nd of November, I think. And it's going to be 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And we're having it at the very historic and very haunted Carl Schurz High School on the north side of Chicago, which is this enormous, beautiful old high school. And the principal there is really eager to do events like this. They have a growing program in the arts, so they really want to support filmmakers and artists. And he also loves paranormal stuff, so he's really excited about having it. And we've got so much space. We've got in the main auditorium, which seats, I think, like 2,500 people, we've got speakers, and Willie, of course, will be doing the films all weekend, the Chicago Paranormal Film Festival. And we've got a secondary speaking area in the library, which is going to be American Hauntings. We've got friends coming from all over the country to talk about specific hauntings or specific cities. Michael's going to be talking about Sally House, which he's done so much work at. Jeff Belandro will be talking about the Lizzie Borden House. Scott Marcus is going to be talking about L.A. hauntings. Amelia Cotter is going to be talking about hauntings related to Baltimore and Edgar Allan Poe. I'll be talking about Bachelor's Grove Cemetery. I think we have someone coming to talk about Gettysburg. So a lot of different topics in there about kind of ghost lore from around the country and investigations. And then we've got another area that's going to be workshops. We've got Vince Petisci, who is going to be doing a tarot workshop. We've got someone who's going to be doing a workshop on researching property histories. Michael, of course, is going to be doing a phenomenal AVP workshop. We've got Steve Huff coming to do a workshop on recording using radio. We've got, oh my gosh, who else? I can't even think of who else. But on our main stage, we're having our kind of key person is Alexandra Holzer, the daughter of Hans Holzer, who was an inspiration, I know, to a lot of people over many years with his prolific writings. And, you know, I didn't know this, but he was the creator of the so-called Holzer method of investigating haunted places. And the Holzer method, it's nothing more or less than just the classic, what we just assume today that people will do is to go into a situation or a site with from a scientific angle and with from a spiritual angle. So going in with scientific equipment, but also with a sensitive. So this is, you know, something we just take for granted now, but apparently he was, you know, the inventor of this method. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, and the guest list is still kind of open at this point, right?
Yeah, we've got a lot of people that we've been filling in the blanks with. We've got Jeff Belanger, of course, who's always a favorite. He's going to be doing his 30-odd minutes show live, his web show that's really popular. And you know, if listeners don't know, Jeff is the writer and location scout for Ghost Adventures. And he's also, he's been nominated for an Emmy for a PBS series he's been doing about legends and lore of New England, which he's from Massachusetts. So he'll be with us again. Bob Murch is going to be with us. He is the world's leading authority on Ouija boards, and he's going to be bringing some representations of his collection and talking about the history of Ouija boards and some of his own experiences with researching with Ouija boards.
Then I will not be there for that presentation because you know my feeling on them.
I do. Oh, and I can't forget, of course, everyone's favorite, Scott Grunewald, is going to be with us.
There you go.
Hopefully not doing any naked ghost hunting, but one never knows.
You know what? Scott and I were talking about that, and we're probably going to be setting up something to do private-wise in that way, and if anybody wants to...
Oh, God.
No, I'm not even kidding. No, I'm not even kidding.
Wait, no, you have to make him perfect the full scrotum camera then.
Yeah. We won't be in works. I've talked to Bill Chappell, and he's going to try and get a full scrotum connect camera so everybody can connect with...
No.
Yeah.
There are some other phone cards. Just run.
Reese is not available.
We
had Chandler there with us. Funny as hell.
Dennis, by the way, I have worked everything out, and you will be here for Ghost Conference 6. So just don't worry about that. I got you taken care of, brother.
Sweet.
Is your grandma going to drive him?
Huh? Yes.
Is your grandma going to drive him here?
Yeah.
And I'm scared now. Wait. Hold grandpa. That's the scary thing. I don't ride shotgun with old people.
I just got a picture of the Clampett car and Beverly Hillbillies with like Granny like on the
rocking chair on the back, yeah.
We'll put you on the rocking chair on the back of it.
Well, that would be
the scary thing. They'd stick me on it.
Wait, Dennis, was that a stab because you have a southern accent?
Yeah.
I think it may have been.
Let me just clear that up.
But ding, 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 ding. Apparently, you're coming with your sister wife.
Yeah, me and my cousin's gonna make out our trip. We don't come apart. We expect
maybe
around that time anyway. But, you know, my cousin says to mine, but
she's going to let him have the teeth for the weekend.
Shit, what's even worse is I was thinking of Carl from Sling Blade.
Yeah.
I mean, the red side.
Maybe I get me some of my Chicago pizza. I like me some Chicago pizza. Most people call it a pie, but I call it a pizza.
Mm-hmm. See where this is going. Now it's Dennis's turn to check out the undercarriage on the bus. Oh well. That's all right.
Also,
Michael, you have developed this really malicious little laugh over the last couple of weeks. Did you know that, Michael? You really have. I think you might have an attachment.
Story of my life.
Kind of hoping at this point in his age he does have an attachment. If not, then he's been really wrong to some female and lost his attachment. And in which case, can we start calling him John then?
What, as in deer?
Don't say no.
No, as in, who was the guy whose wife, like, you know, lopped off his wiener and chucked it out into an intersection cornfield?
Bobbitt.
Lorraine Bobbitt. He works at, my ex-husband told me that he ran into him working at some, like, whorehouse, like, in the desert, like, out in Nevada. He's a bartender.
Just a porn career didn't work out? He was being a porn star for a while because he had so on.
I thought you were going to say, I guess, your marriage didn't work out. No, it didn't.
Yeah, I don't know how many he actually was in, but apparently he had one of the, like, little squeeze puff inflatables. I don't know how else to put it. But, yeah, he was going to be a porn star.
All right, where exactly is the show going now?
Anywhere but here.
All right. So Scott Grunewald gets brought up.
That's always a problem.
The naked investigator, then it goes to porn.
Remember last, were you guys talking about the naked haunted house on your show? Remember last fall, there was some town that was having the haunted house that you went through in the nude.
Yeah, so we did make light of that one because I saw it in the news articles. That's been
sounds like a Dennis John promoted Duncan. That one.
you were more vulnerable going through it, so you would be more scared.
Yes, yeah, and
Aren't there some ghost hunting teams that investigate in the nude? I thought I heard about that.
I just got tugged on.
And that's why it intrigues me, not for the rub and tug by spirit, but it creates a whole level of vulnerability that you don't normally experience. I mean, obviously you're going to be out of your element and you're going to be a little more like, holy shit, what was that? And
plus, I don't think you'll never look at dowsing rods the same again either, I'm sure.
No. If they find penis, then you might want to have a conversation. With your parents, and other friends.
I am actually intrigued with the idea of a naked investigation, simply for the fact that, you know, I've had my jacket tugged on. My jacket? Yeah. I've had
your
my jacket tugged on. I've had, yeah, yeah. I've been touched numerous times.
But not in the naughty place, kids.
Awesome. I think it would be, you know, pretty damn awesome to actually.
They call that a.
Touch.
They call that a succubus.
Man, I'm not sure I want to go that far. Now, I have to say this.
But you always have to leave 20 on the nightstand.
Well, see, not around here. It's only $10.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. That neck of the woods.
I do have to say this. I just got a message that, well, what the hell? And now I just freaked out my entire computer. But the message was, where in the hell did it go? I have completely lost a screen. All right. But apparently we're supposed to make mention that Ouija boards are not to be fooled with. Well, see, I disagree. Ouija boards are fine. They're nothing more than opening a doorway and requesting spirit to communicate with you. Well, in my honest opinion, aren't we doing the same damn thing when we set a recorder in the middle of the room and ask a spirit to communicate with us? Or when we set a millimeter in the middle of the room and ask them to communicate with us that way? We are opening that door just with a different item.
I don't know, 613 Ouija boards. 613 Ouija boards in our office and see what you get.
Well, I'm just not, you know.
Well, I know, but it's like, you know, I used to believe like you too. I mean, I really did. And then things started to change for my belief on those. And maybe, and I don't know what it is because the thing was built as a toy. I mean, it's nothing more than a toy. And it's, well, I guess it's from some more ancient information. But it's really like a little engine, a little generator. And I can only tell you from personal experience, when we had all those Ouija boards in the offices, things would lit. I mean, things were lit. I mean, everything was hypersensitive. Everything was dark and morose, threatening. You know, and I'd like to say, well, that's not because of the Ouija board, because it's just a tool. But Ursula backed me here. I don't know. Ursula? She's gone.
Hold on. Hold on.
Drop her? Wait. We dropped her. I'm bringing her back in live now. There we go. Welcome
I'm
back,
here.
Ursula. Have a nice call.
Ursula,
hi, thank
you.
Second. Yeah, I would say, I was going to say, I'm wondering if there would have been the same thing if we had, you know, 20 pairs of dowsing rods or 20, you know, ghost boxes or whatever, anything that somebody, people would have used in the past to try and communicate or, and, you know, had gotten, you know, energy attached to, whatever. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but
I agree with you. I agree with you that it's different. I agree with you that it's different. I'm being devil's advocate.
Well, I did the SS house investigation, the local private investigation, where I got film footage of this woman just getting, she had did a Ouija board for like 20 years. All her best friends came through it. And she could do the Ouija board without having a Ouija board. And I've got film of just her back being just ripped into shreds with scratches that I took. And it took a door and threw a door open so hard that the door jam buried itself into a cinder block. I couldn't rip it out. And I don't know if it's the Ouija board or other things, but I know a Ouija board was involved.
Yeah,
so
I don't know. You know, I've had a lot of encounters with people who have had things like that happen, too. We had an incident that I wrote about in my first book at my school at Benedictine University in the 1980s where some students took a Ouija board into the monks' cemetery behind the abbey, and the one of the young men ended up in the hospital. And he was never really quite the same after that either. And a similar thing happened with my first cousin, when she was at school at Dominican University, also out in the suburbs here in Chicago, where one of her friends got thrown against the wall of their dorm room when they were using the Ouija board. And, you know, of course, you can dismiss all this stuff, whatever. I think it's more of a concentration of energy when you've got, you know, several people, you know, focused on this one thing. I would agree, definitely, very similar to what we were doing at the center, you know, those few weeks when we were really concentrating on focusing our energy.
Yeah. Well, with the dowsing rods, I mean, my utilities people bring dowsing rods out to find the water lines, you know, in the yard.
Right.
You know, the purposes seem to be very different among the different scrying tools. You know, dowsing rods are used also for scrying and finding unmarked graves, but, you know, they're also used for finding water and other life-giving, purposeful things or what have you, where maybe the Ouija board just never really had a good use.
That's a good point.
I mean, its original purpose was, well, I can't say its original purpose because I truly don't know. I'm not that well versed in the Ouija board, so I'm not sure when the first ones came out. But I know, like, you know, back when Parker Brothers started putting them out, the idea was entertainment only. So I don't know. I mean, it's definitely interesting to me. So, you know, hearing
entertainment only is a disclaimer, you know.
Yeah, Bill Chappell puts that on all the equipment he makes,
yeah,
too.
Entertainment only is not a purpose. It's a disclaimer, you know.
Yeah, every piece of ITC equipment that I own has, for entertainment purposes only, my SB7, everything.
Mm-hmm.
So,
my submachine gun, entertainment purposes only.
hey, well, while we still have a couple minutes left live, where I think we're down, what, Dennis, 8 minutes?
Right about.
Yeah, right about there.
8 minutes and Mark.
One thing that is going to happen, and Ursula, I know we've been talking about this since last year, is a huge Eastland disaster recognition going on.
Right.
I know this year is 99, next year is 100.
Right.
But for everything else that encompasses the Chicago River, the Chicago shoreline that has to do with wreck disasters, we are going to be doing a boat tour. So, and a couple of them, not many. So keep an eye on ChicagoHauntings.com, and hopefully we'll be able to work out the logistics in the next, like, I don't know, week and a half, something like that, to where we can actually set it up. So, but yeah, it's going to be Chicago Hauntings from the water, which I don't believe has ever been done before.
There,
you know, what I would
Chicago Hauntings has never been on the water before.
I'll tell you one thing I'd love to do, and I've seen it done on TV, but I would love to be able to actually dive to a wreck and, you know, see if you can get EVPs from a wreck underwater.
I've got a hydrophone. We're going to be using a hydrophone. I've got a dolphin ear hydrophone microphone. We're going to actually be recording at the site to build a disc of EVPs and sounds from the location that'll be included in a tour brochure that we'll be giving during the celebration.
Yeah, we should say that weekend is going to be July 18th and 19th. It's Friday and Saturday. And this is two independent ideas that came together so wonderfully Wally Dworak and dear friend of ours, and who did a lot of tours with Richard Crow, the late Richard Crow, and a great researcher, and Marion Cheatham, who wrote a young adult novel about based on and inspired by the Eastland disaster called Eastland. They had approached me about helping put together a tour to commemorate the 99th anniversary to sort of kick off this year of remembrance of the Eastland disaster. And if listeners don't know, the Eastland disaster, summer of 1915, almost 840 people die in the Chicago River in 19 feet of water on a summer morning in July when the boat tips over before it's set to bring employees and family members and friends on a company picnic across the lake. The worst disaster in Chicago history, deadliest disaster in Great Lakes history. So they wanted to do an all-day tour going to some of the locations that are important to the Eastland disaster, including the disaster site along the river, Harpo Studios, Oprah Winfrey Studios, which was the armory at the time that was the main morgue for all of the victims, the Western Electric plant where most of the employees worked who had come for the picnic, the grave of George Halas of the Chicago Bears at St. Albert Cemetery. He was very famously waiting in line to get on the ship when it tipped over, so a big point of interest for a lot of people. So they had come to me about doing that. At the same time, I had started working with Michael, and I thought it would be so wonderful if he could put together a concert with his musical compositions using this ambient noise and EVPs and sort of cultural sounds and music from the Czech and Bohemian communities, which were affected by the disaster, and to perform it actually at Bohemian National Cemetery, which is the site where a lot of the victims are buried. And so we actually were able to get permission to do that with the cemetery. So on Friday, July 18th, Michael will be performing this concert at Bohemian National Cemetery. And on Saturday, we will be doing this all-day tour to the sites that are, associated with the Eastland disaster. And we'll have all that information on Michael's website, which is phantomairwaves.com, and on chicagohauntings.com, chicagoghosts.com, et cetera.
Yeah, and for my end of it, as water travel, tickets will be limited just due to the fact of the capacity and Coast Guard and all that kind of stuff. But it will be a special thing for that event, which Ursa and we'll obviously iron out the details later. If in fact for quote unquote, I'm not going to say the name, if we can work it out to get a specific event around Ghost Conference 6, just a one night, one thing, bands, booze, fun, I still think it's something that we could possibly explore.
Let's jump into plugs. Those that are, we just lost Ursula again. So we will start with Michael. Go ahead and throw out your plugs. As soon as Ursula calls back in, I'll get her back on the board live, and we can get her plugs in there, but we're down to just over a minute.
You can find more information about a lot of the stuff that we're working on and my music and stuff on www.phantomairwaves.com. And also,
they keep throwing me off the radio. That's three times. They don't want me, just tell me.
Damn inner city connections.
It's Matt. Right.
Yeah.
So,
no.
We're down to 38 seconds. Ursula, throw out your plugs, darling.
Plugs.
Yeah, ChicagoHauntings.com, ChicagoGhosts.com. And for non-ghosty people, we're starting Chicago sports tours next week, too. No ghosts, just sports. So visit us for that, too. And just keep in touch. If you want to join the Center for Psychical Research, get in touch with Michael or me.
Awesome. And for Full Spectrum Radio, I'm CPR Dennis. That's CPR Matt. You can catch us at CPR Matt and Dennis at Facebook and Twitter. And we're in archive. Woohoo! All right. So, as far as GhostCon, you have 3 days of, is it 2 days or 3 days?
3 days.
Yeah, that's awesome. Now,
It's going to be good.
Do you have, like, teams and everything that are setting up, or are you just doing...
Yeah, we always have a lot of teams that come to with the vendor area, so there's a ton of teams that always come. There's going to be authors, teams, vendors, you know, artists. We're going to have a bunch of exhibits. The black t-shirt exhibit. Yeah, you got to encourage everybody to send in their black t-shirts for a black t-shirt
exhibit. The team shirts, we're going to display them all up and down the halls.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Yeah, I've got a few teams
in
the Virginia area that I'm going to hit this week to get t-shirts out to you too, dear.
Great.
So, one of the other things that, and this has puzzled me for a long time, and I'm gonna pick on Ursula for a moment. During your tours, you know, countless people take photographs. How often do you get back images from them going, "What the hell is this?"
Oh. Frequently, there's a couple locations where there's a lot of them. One of them is Hull House, and another one is the alley behind the Oriental Theater, which was the same alley that was behind the Iroquois Theater, where there was a fire in 1903 that took 602 lives, a lot of them kids. And those are two locations where we constantly get interesting.
The alley behind the theater. A lot of people got pushed out the doors because the fire escapes didn't reach yet. They were not up to code, and the rush to get out, people thought they were getting on the fire escapes, and they ended up 160-something or whatever bodies ended up in the alley.
Yeah, there were 125 that died out of 300 that went out that fifth floor door. The rest of them lived because they fell on the others who had died. So that was a big area in the fire where a lot of deaths occurred.
Well, okay, so, and that was, let's see, now the Great Chicago Fire was when?
1871.
Not being from there, I'm kind of not real good on Chicago history, but I'm definitely going to pick your brain. The World's Fair. I keep hearing about the White City and all of that. Is any of that still standing?
Yeah, there's only three buildings in Chicago that were part of the original construction for the fair. One of them is the Art Institute of Chicago, which is on Michigan Avenue. Another one is the Field Museum, also off of Michigan Avenue, off of Lakeshore Drive. But the only building that was built on the fairgrounds in Jackson Park that's still standing was the Palace of Fine Arts, which is today the Museum of Science and Industry. And that's one of the weirdest places around. That place is so haunted. It's crazy. There's stories there about H.H. Holmes, the serial killer, that he, of course, used to visit the fair to find victims. And so he would actually have, you know, spent time in this building. And there's an exhibit in the museum called Yesterday's Main Street that looks like a turn-of-the-century street scene with cobblestones and storefronts and stuff. And the museum staff says that they will see this apparition in that exhibit that looks just like him with the long coat and the mustache and the bowler hat. There's also the Burlington Zephyr, which is a beautiful train from the 30s that's housed in the museum that people say they will hear voices on it, or they'll be touched, what have you. And then the U-505 submarine is housed in the museum, which was captured in World War II. In fact, Michael wants to go and record there for a project he's working on. But also people will have all kinds of stuff happen on there.
Now, the museum, is it possible to get in there for an investigation?
No, you know, we've tried to do that, and every once in a while I try to contact somebody about it, because I've spoken there a bunch of times and I've done a bunch of events there. But every time I contact, you know, my contact person, they say they're going to find out, and then, you know, no one ever does. So it's weird, though. They had a 30-year-old guy that was a blogger that lived in the museum for 30 days and blogged about it. So I don't think it's, you know, I think one thing that someone told me was that the museums have this policy that they can't let anyone do it because then they'll have to let everybody do it. So, you know, that's the only thing of any real construct that I've heard as far as a reason goes. You know, I just kind of get the run around when I go to people and ask.
Right. Now, I know that you have, you know, a lot of locations that you go to that are kind of exclusive permission to get into. What is the one place that you're absolutely dying to get into that you haven't been able to yet?
Harpo Studio, absolutely, no doubt about it. No one's investigated there ever. There were about 600 victims from the Eastland disaster that were housed there, and it took 8 days for all of them to be claimed. That's where everybody wants to go.
Oprah's really against it.
Yeah. She doesn't own the building anymore. I guess she just sold it.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
We know. We shall see. But she was very much opposed to anything like that, even though she spoke very freely about it being haunted when she first moved in. And she even did a show about it in the 80s, way back when. But then she stopped talking about it, and she refused to talk about it. And, you know, there was never, you know, anyone allowed inside to investigate ever.
Yeah, that's kind of a local mecca, if you will. Everybody trying to get in there, nobody has access.
Right. Right.
Yeah, that's like, you know, where I grew up, I remember back in, and okay, we already threw this out. I remember back in the mid-70s, latter 70s, Xenia, Ohio is right at the top of Tornado Alley, as they call it, through the, you know, the heartlands and everything. Pretty much the entire town of Xenia was wiped out. At this point, I'm not sure what the death toll was, but there were a significant number of deaths. And I won't say the grocery supply company that has it now, but at the end of that, their large freezers were utilized as the morgue, so to speak, just to hold all the bodies. Because the local morgue, I mean, Xenia is a small, small town.
Right.
And their local morgue had capacity for 8 bodies, and they had well beyond that. If I remember right, it was into the low 100s or mid 100s. So they actually used the food storage freezers at the food distribution plant. If I get back to Ohio, trust me, that one place I'm going to go. So that would be pretty awesome.
And, you know, you have to, just because of the energy that has to be around that many at once, that would have to be an off-the-charts
situation. Yeah. So, there's a bar, a pub. It's built into the side of Nottingham Castle. It's called Ye Old Jerusalem. It was built in 1100. And it was a stop for the Crusaders who were going off to the Middle East to go. It was their last stop for their very last, you know, party in England before they went off to fight in the Crusades. And I was there in the 80s, and the most incredible stuff was happening. But that was before I was, like, really into my craft. I think I would love to go back there to Nottingham Castle and hit that bar.
Now, did you hit bar when you were there the last time?
I did. I did hit the pub. I mean, it's got all the original. I mean, so much of it's still authentic from 1100. I mean, all the timber and all the bar itself is still from 1100. And a lot of the long tables, like you would, you know, like Viking tables, if you will, you know, the big, giant, long tables are actually still from the 1100.
That's crazy. That's awesome.
And they have a sword that's mounted above the door as you go in. It's called Ye Old Jerusalem.
It just amazes me that, you know, things built in that time period can still exist today. I mean, just imagine everybody that's been at that over, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years. Just insane amount of, well, if walls could talk, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, Sherwood Forest still has the oldest oak tree in England, and that's well over, you know, 700 years old. For a tree, that's a long lifespan. I mean, all the branches are propped up on stilts and stuff. I mean, it's really showing its age, but, you know, that's a huge oak tree.
Yeah, we've got a location here in the Richmond area that it was actually the second settled location in the New World. Jamestown settled 1607, and Nisley settled 1611. You know, so it has seen, you know, first-time people from England coming over. It has seen the Revolutionary War. It's seen the Civil War. It is amazing. Actually, the EVP that I played you earlier came from one of the buildings in that location.
Oh, wow.
There was, like, in 1611, when they settled it, they chased out the Algonquin Indians. And then in 1622, apparently the Indians decided, you know what, screw this. We want our land back. And they came back and massacred 350-plus people.
Wow.
The new settlers to take back their land. Now, the voice that you heard on that EVP, I can't for the life of me place a time frame on that individual. You know, I don't catch any specific dialect. I don't catch any specific time frame on it. It just doesn't make sense. Now, they know there were 57 Confederate soldiers killed on that site. It's actually on a point where the river forks and goes around it.
Yeah.
But and not to mention its next-door neighbor, which is, I don't know, a quarter mile up the road, is a power plant that supplies pretty much the whole Richmond area. So it has plenty of energy to draw from. There's constantly footsteps and all kinds of weird shit moving. As far as a place for shadow figures and movement, I've seen more there than I have seen in any other one location, period. But just the history on a location like the castle that you're talking about in the pub, that's incredible.
Well, the one place that I would suggest, Ursula, next time you do a kind of Eastern thing, like national tour, would be, I can't say it, but Dennis, you know what I'm talking about, is the D word. The D location.
Oh, mine?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, where I get called a fucker every single time I walk in.
I hate when that happens.
That's pretty redundant with you.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, in this location, I have one room that I sent my team in. Three members of my team went in that room. They spent almost 30 minutes in there. They didn't catch a single EVP, nothing. I walked into that room, and this is the third time I had been into that room. I stopped at the doorway. I didn't even go in the room. I got choked in the room, so I'm kind of a little hesitant on that room. And just before I got choked, I captured an EVP that says, "Choke that fucker." Plain as day.
Don't you have that on the board?
No, I don't have that one on the board. That is one that I'm going to upload to the board. I have most everything on my SoundCloud, though. I know I've got one a fight on my soundboard, which is what I'm leading into. I sent my team into the basement when I was doing the radio show. They spent almost 30 minutes in that room, didn't capture a single EVP. I did a quick on-the-spot thing with Matt, left him, and I think you had Jody Parks, and I don't remember who else was on with you. Oh, Tracy Ann was on with you that night. So he had two lovely ladies, and I'm stuck with, three dudes in the dark doing an investigation. There's no justice in this world.
Jealous.
I went back. Well, yeah. But I went back and I joined my team and I said, all right, you two go to the general manager's office. I'll stay in the basement with Corey. And we part ways. I go, all right, Corey, where do you want to go? And he goes, oh, you know what room I want to go in, man. We're going in with your buddy. Damn. So I let him go into the room. I stood at the doorway, right at the threshold. Start the recorder. I reach in and I set the recorder on a box. And I said, all right, Corey. at this point, he was a new investigator with me. It's only his second time out. I said, you run the EVP session. The first thing he says was, we came down earlier and you didn't do anything or say anything. We didn't even get a single blip on a K2. Now Dennis is here. What do you want to do? And almost a crystal clear Class A comes back with, fucker, I want to fight. Again, why I got to be fucker?
Yeah. Somebody doesn't like you there.
No, he does not. And I'm not sure why.
I've had it happen too, and I don't know why or why they single out certain people. It may be the energy you put out. It might be, who knows? I don't know if they're able to see at all or detect images, or if it's just the energy that you put out that makes entities react that way sometimes.
Well, for this one, I've talked to two other psychics about it that can, I guess, put their energy out there. And between the three of us, just like Matt, I don't give any information. I go, this is the location that I want you to focus on. Kind of put your energy there and see what you come up with. All three of us have come up with what we are pretty certain is the same individual. We all three had the same description. We all three had a J name on him. But we all three see him the same exact way. Huh. And all three of us, let's see, one of them was in Seattle at the time, Chelsea DeMalley. Tracy Ann, who's not far from you guys, also looked in on this place.
Amazing.
All three of us have the same description on this character. And all three of us know, well, all three of us came up with the same thing that we think he is doing. He doesn't believe he's dead. Well, here's,
yeah.
When I did my remote on him and I tried to talk to him, I got that he wrecked and killed his girlfriend. And
okay.
He just believes that he's dead.
Just
right?
Kind of a bastard kind of guy.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
When Chelsea kind of looked in on it, she said, well, what I get is he's looking for proof that he's dead. He's looking for some kind of documentation that he's dead.
Right.
This room is just stacked box after box after box with the old original files before they got transferred into digital copy.
Sure.
Of each burial site and who's on it. But the cemetery's been in business since the 30s, and it has family owned the land first, and they were pre-Civil War on that location. And they have their own family.
Yeah, I hate to cut you short. I've got to run into work. I work graveyards. So... I'd love, yeah, I want to hear the rest of the story, though. And can we talk another time real soon? Or I'd love to.
No, by all means. By all means.
Yeah. I've got to run into
work. Joining us on the show tonight.
Oh, my God. Thank you for having me on. It was wonderful. You guys are great. and definitely, we got to do this again. I do want to hear the rest of the story. It's just that I can't be late for work here.
I won't blame you at all. You have a great night.
Okay, man.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
But, yeah, he's got some fantastic ideas. And so, you know, I enjoy talking with sharp minds about this field. And Ursula, most definitely, thank you so much for joining us. Oh, Ursula dropped two.
Yeah.
On her own, brother.
Yeah, she dropped a while ago.
Yeah, well, I was
so, and
bored.
She texts me and she goes, yeah, I'm not calling him again. she goes, tell Dennis or tell yourself that you're an asshole. But no, it's...
damn it.
No,
she's
just giving me shit on... why she kept getting dropped, which, I'm sorry, dear. Also, your phone is not the most conducive to anything. So, yes, don't blame us for it. But I love Ursula and Michael, just in general, being able to have the opportunity to work with them. Collaborate with them. It's absolutely, absolutely phenomenal. I have two of the greatest minds within history and execution just involved. It's absolutely amazing, and I personally feel so blessed to be able to work with them. So
yeah, they're definitely phenomenal. I look forward to GhostCon when I can get out there and hang out with y'all.
I mean, riding around with Ursula on our tours and hearing about, you know, all the history of the location. Like I said, I wasn't checking up. I wasn't doing anything else other than. Is this something someone can Google?
No, that shit doesn't show up. By the way, for everybody doing research on a location, Wikipedia is shit. Don't believe it. If you want to test me on that theory, go to Wikipedia and click upload. And you can type whatever the hell you want. So, no, don't use that as a source.
And, Bill, to answer your question, brother, on how you're still listening to us on the phone, you are called in. You are actually in the board. Same way that we're still broadcasting, actually just into archive. We are not broadcasting on air anymore, but it's in the archive, so it will still be recorded. And anybody that actually clicks the link and comes to the archive can still hear us. But at this point...
But do you want to go, or you want to see if Bill has any questions?
No, brother, I'm done, man. I've been up at 6 each morning for the last 3 days dealing with grandbaby. I'm pretty much exhausted.
Now, yeah, and you're an hour ahead of me. So it is 11:27 your time right now?
Right. And last night I had a friend that was having some issues, so I stayed on the phone until almost 2 in the morning. I was back up at 6:30-ish this morning. I'm pretty much retarded at this point. We'll go ahead and close this show out. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening in to us tonight on Full Spectrum Radio. Of course, on the URN network.
Wait. Special shout out. Thank you, Bill, for hanging with us for this long. I'm
not
surprised you didn't
hang with us, but...
No, he's been with us for most of it. And thank you, Bill. I'm surprised you didn't hang up in the first 5 minutes that you tuned in.
Yeah, well, now, Bill, I do know that Bill is the caller that we spoke to a couple of weeks ago that he's being ordained this Saturday. So, by the way, congratulations and God bless. Thank you so much for what you do.
Congratulations.
And he has a very sharp mind in this field. I'm just exhausted, so I'm going to end up crashing out before much longer. So, if I don't just, keel over, I'm not sure. But thank you so much for joining us tonight, ladies and gentlemen. I am CPR Dennis.
I am CPR Matt.
You can find us at those names on Facebook and Twitter. Make sure to check us out at Chicagoland Paranormal Researchers at .com and the Facebook. And at this point, I bid you a fantastic week. God bless, and we'll talk to you next week.
See you next Wednesday.
I figured with all the sleep I need, this is like
summer has come and passed. The innocent can never last. Wake me up when September ends. Like my father's come to pass, 7 years has gone so fast. Wake me up when September ends.